This week I'm joined by my usual co-host Tom Bowles, and before we get into a little breakdown of the Charlotte Speed Weeks, as they are colloquially known in the NASCAR industry coming up, I want to talk to you guys a little bit about our friends at DraftKings. Even though the NASCAR regular season is closing in on the halfway point of the regular season, you still have plenty of time to jump in on all the action with DraftKings. On DraftKings, the objective is simple. Pick six drivers, watch how they perform on Sundays, and if you pick correctly, you can be eligible for massive cash prizes. All you have to do to jump in on the action is to sign up through the DraftKings link on the Front Stretch Podcast article page, make a $5 deposit, and you'll be eligible for a free entry into one of the Coke 600 contests at Charlotte. Once again, DraftKings.com, where you choose, you play, you win. How are you doing today, Tom?
Doing great. We've been abandoned. No third this week, but I think you and I can handle it ourselves.
I think we can. I think we always do a halfway decent job, right?
Yeah. Well, at least we think so. I guess that's what's most important, right? So let's dive in.
Yes, absolutely. So we got Charlotte Speed Weeks ahead of us here. One of the more fun, exciting times of the year in the NASCAR world. You know, all the teams and drivers come back to their home base at Charlotte. In a lot of ways, I think this is an evaluatory time for everybody in this sport. You know, we got the All-Star race this weekend. We're going to get to some of the notes around the Coke 600, because a couple items there, some news around that this week. But we got some changes for the All-Star race that I want to kind of break down real quick. We've got option tires. We've got format changes. The All-Star race, in many ways, I think, has become somewhat stale over the years. And I think that, you know, we've seen the sport kind of try to shake things up with format changes every single year, trying to figure out ways to kind of make this race really relevant. What do you make of the All-Star race over the past 5 to 10 years? And do you think that the latest format changes really do anything to kind of make an impact towards bring this race back to the prominence of it?
Yeah, I think that, honestly, you're right in that the All-Star race has gotten stale, and for a number of reasons. And one of the main points that has been brought up this year that I've read so much about is the fact that such a high percentage of drivers are going to end up making the final field for the All-Star race. I think it's something that we haven't really considered until recently. You look at the NBA All-Star game, you look at the NHL All-Star game, you know, there's what? A small percentage of the overall hockey players that play in the top are in the All-Star game. Sometimes it's 5%, maybe in the case of Major League Baseball, that number is a percentage point or two higher or lower. Whereas in NASCAR, we've got about 40 full-time competitors each week in Cup, and half the field in the end is going to make the All-Star race when all is said and done. Now, even if you trimmed that down to all the winners from last year, you've still got, you know, 12 to 14 guys, right, Matt? So that's like well over a quarter of the field, up to a third of the field. But at least 25 years ago, when the All-Star race was hot, and that's what the format's been based off of, you had upwards of 100 drivers competing in any given season, right? At least making one Cup start. So it felt like the drivers that were running the All-Star race were the best of the best. Now it's kind of, well, this is the top half of the field that's running each week anyways.
Yeah, that's a fair point, I think. I think that's a very fair point. It's something we hear a lot with, you know, around the shootout every year, the Clash now. You know, the issue I take with that, and this is not really directed at anybody who makes that argument, because I think it's a fair argument, but NASCAR is in a bit of a rock and a hard place there, because if NASCAR were to make it a more exclusive event, say, you know, the top 12 or whatever, you know, figure out however you want to make the eligibility requirements at your leisure there. But I don't think anybody wants to watch 12 cars race for 70 laps. I mean, that's not interesting. I think one of the biggest problems right now in IndyCar is, I think that, for instance, not to take it too off topic, but that series just doesn't have large enough fields. I think that for motor racing to be really interesting, you need a bigger fields, you know, creates more variables, you know, you get lap cars involved, you know, you get more faces out there. So I think you make a good point insofar as back when, you know, in the one hot night days in 92, you know, you had a 20 car field back then. you probably had 50 cars, you know, attempting each week. Now, granted, the contention against that is that you still really only had 30 to 35 full-time, you know, drivers and teams that were really showing up consistently every single week. But, you know, there is a fair argument that, you know, in those days there were more faces, there were more teams, there were more drivers, and it did feel more like an all-star event. How do you fix that?
I think that's the unanswered question that we've had for what, the last 10, 15 years, Matt. You know, as the sport has evolved and as we've tried pretty much everything but the kitchen sink, don't you feel like the rules this year, which are made to match 1992, the most famous all-star race we've ever had, you know, everybody that has watched racing since then, or even kids getting brought up now that may not have seen racing in the 90s. I mean, you hear the story, you see it. Dale Earnhardt spins on the backstretch of the last lap. Richard Petty's son, Kyle, is poised to win the race. But, oh, my God, here comes this other guy, Davey Allison, on the inside line. He wins the race side by side, spins after the checkered flag, gets hit by Petty, hits the wall in a shower of sparks, wakes up in a hospital room, not even knowing what happened. I don't know if you could script a better finish. And I think ever since, we've just been begging and looking to try and match expectations that were really once in a generation. And, you know, these rules, don't you think, are just the, like, ultimate breaking point, returning that to 1992, throwing in the extra set of tires, doing average finish, doing elimination style stuff, making pit road important. I don't know what more you could do.
Yeah, here's the thing. I think all-star type events everywhere, and I hate, you know, I know a lot of fans don't like it when we bring it back to other sports, but I hate to break it to those people. It's relevant in a lot of cases. And I think this is absolutely one of them. If you take a look at how all-star events have declined over the years in any sport, whether it's the MLB, NFL, the NBA, they've all suffered huge, huge declines. To give you some perspective, back in just as recently as the late 90s, the MLB All-Star Game would regularly pull ratings that are on par with today's NBA Finals, okay? They would get 16.0, 17.0 ratings. Huge, huge. People, that was an event back then, the MLB All-Star Game. And now, the MLB All-Star Game is lucky if they get 10 million viewers, you know? So they've lost maybe half of their audience for the All-Star event. And what's interesting is NASCAR, comparatively, if you really take a look at the numbers, actually hasn't lost that much of its All-Star kind of viewership over the it's actually been a little bit slower than some other races. I don't think there's really much you can draw from that. But I think it just kind of underscores the fact that as a sporting society, I think that all-star events were something that really came into prominence in the 80s and 90s. And they were really, I think, popular in a time when we didn't have as much access to drivers and teams, you know, or sports figures in general. They just carried a different meaning in a different time, in a different era, and I think in a lot of ways they're relics of a different era. I don't know if they're necessary today. And I don't know if we see that discussed much on the NASCAR side. Everyone's like, well, we got to do this format, and we got to do that. It's like you could have the most exciting all-star race in the world this weekend, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to make the all-star race mean that much more. I think nowadays people are more concerned about, you know, is what I'm watching having an effect on the overall championship? Really feels like it's more important. You see that in other sports. You see that now in NASCAR. I mean, whether it's been the chase or stage racing, big events are much more popular in other sports nowadays. I just don't know if all-star events are ever going to carry the clout that they used to.
Well, I think that's a good point. I think access is really important, like you talked about. You know, the 1990s versus now, you can go watch in baseball, let's say, if there's a guy on the Seattle Mariners that you never got a chance to see other than the All-Star game, you could jump on MLB.com, get an MLB.TV package, see that guy any night of the week, anytime you want. You could hop on the internet and see highlights of virtually – any Major League Baseball team. And I think in NASCAR, because the amount of people that are now racing, I know you're saying, yeah, we saw the big stars every week. But even back in the late 80s, guys like Cal Yarbrough, before he retired, were running a limited schedule. You know, some of these all-stars, you know, would show up for the race, and you wouldn't see them every week. And this was a great opportunity for them to, you know, put forth a great effort. And guys like Richard Petty, even if they were racing every week, the All-Star race gave them an opportunity within a 20-car field to be highlighted and be special, when otherwise they really weren't doing jack at the front of the field. They weren't close to contending. And so I think that's why the All-Star race carried such luster. You know, I remember in the mid-90s, you know, DW in 95 was contending for a win in the All-Star race when he hadn't so much as sniffed one in a couple years. And so I think that's where it had a little bit of extra luster. And now it's like, well, this is the same intermediate that we run, just like all the other intermediates that we're struggling at. And people are trying to learn stuff for the 600 the following week. But does it really matter? Because everyone's going to qualify. You don't even have extra teams show up for the Open that you wouldn't usually see, because they're looking to qualify for the 600 the following week. You know, you could say that the sport has evolved, contracted, changed, whatever word you want to use, but it's absolutely different than it was even 10 years ago.
You know, and even 10 years ago, I remember growing up, the All-Star race was definitely a little bit bigger deal, you know, in 01 through 05, kind of when I grew up on the sport. But even then, I distinctly remember thinking to myself, like, man, like, I would rather see the Coke 600, like, it's a bigger race, more important, points on the line. You know, I enjoy the All-Star race. I think it's fun for what it is. But it's, I don't know if there's really much you could do outside of really radical stuff. I think if you really want to make the All-Star race matter, I think NASCAR should start taking a look at figuring out some way to make this radically different from any other race. And I think if they went to, like, an IROC style car for, like, one race, that would be something really cool. Like, you got to do something that's very different. Maybe, you know, take the top two or three Xfinity Series drivers, bring them up, you know, bring some truck guys in. You could get really radical, bring guys from, you know, IMSA or even IndyCar or something. Like, figure out a way to make it so that you're really testing the top Cup drivers and put them all in equal equipment. I think that would make for a much different, better, unique show than just it's another intermediate track race. And I like intermediates, don't get me wrong, but it's just like, you know, you're going to see the same thing next week in the Coke 600. So the All-Star race, to me, I think they really should look at something like either, you know, I really think going to an IROC-style car would be cool. And invite some different drivers. Get some, like, local dirt track champions or something. I don't know. There's got to be a way where NASCAR could, like, maybe look outside of the sport a little bit and outside of the Gen 6 cars or something to really do something special. And I don't think we need to have necessarily the teams involved for this one race of the year. Make it about the drivers. That's what all-star events are about. They're about the individual players and drivers. So, to me, I would take a very radical step, because you know, it's the All-Star race. You can take radical steps with it. I don't think anybody's going to care. They do crazy format changes with this thing every year anyway. Why not try something really radical? I mean, none of the format changes that I've seen the last couple of years have really done much to pique my interest one way or the other. I'm going to watch it regardless. So I don't know. What do you think about that?
I think that's a really good idea, and I think that you look at Alonso going across – exactly. Indy from Monaco to do the 500. And I think we've lost something with the loss of IROC. And I don't know if you can bring IROC back, but wouldn't it be great for Lewis Hamilton to test his skills in a stock car for the All-Star race and make some sort of IROC system? Wouldn't it be great to have some of the IndyCar stars come over like IROC used to be? And I have always thought, you know, we've talked about, and I'm sure we'll talk about it next week, the Indy 500 versus the Coke 600. I think that both sides lose something if they don't find a way to make the double consistently happen. I think it's a very engaging idea that brings motorsports together when all of motorsports as a whole has been struggling. It's not just NASCAR that's been struggling. Yes, IndyCar's come back with the Indy 500. People barely notice IndyCar's on the radar for any other race other than the 500. They may be coming up in ratings there, but they're all but invisible everywhere else. So I think everyone could gain from an all-star race type of format. And I agree. Make it about the drivers. You know, I think we touch on bigger topics that I know we'll delve into at other times, because I think one of the big issues that NASCAR's had in the last decade, you know, is it an individual sport or is it a team sport? And there are elements in the last decade that have made it team. Even with the driver's championship, you have four guys from the same team going for the championship. And is that rubbing people the wrong way when we were brought up on an individual sport? I think it raises some interesting questions.
Well, I think a great way, my dream concept, I'll give you my little dream conception of what I see for the All-Star Race, then we can move on. I would love to see a situation where you have the championship four from the previous season, maybe the top two or three, you know, maybe you get the Xfinity champion, the Truck Series champion, you know, and then you have four open spots that you can use. And then beyond that, you know, you open things up to invitationals, Formula One guys, IndyCar guys, dirt track champions from around the country, IMSA drivers. You know, that would obviously be easier for NASCAR because IMSA is in-house. Let's open this thing up. You know, make the All-Star Race the center of the motorsports world, you know, for 1 week a year. But, you know, keep it NASCAR-centric. You know, the cars would still be NASCAR-type vehicles, but they would all be, you know, performance-matched. I think that'd be fun. But hey, we can dream, right?
So, yeah, well, you're always dreaming, so that's good.
Yes.
You know, but I think that dreams need to be replaced by reality soon, to be honest. And I think that if this race this Saturday night is a failure with all these rules and the aero push is still a problem and you're not getting crowd in Charlotte, I think you got to look at moving it to Bristol. I really do. Because I think that you need to put it on a short track where people can really get aggressive, not worry about the consequences, and then make sure you have people show up. I know that you don't want to take people away from their home base, and it's so important for people to take a breather because it's 2 weeks at home after a long start to the year, a couple months, but they could also build another off week into the schedule, right? I just think that you got to do something different if this doesn't work out this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess I'm somewhat agnostic to it. I think a lot of people are at a point where it's like, okay, it's the All-Star Race. I don't necessarily know if this race is in a position where, like, if it doesn't work out, anything ominous would happen. But, you know, they're still trying things. I just don't get the impression that, like, this is like a make-or-break race or anything like that. But they do need to figure something out to make this race make a little sense. The good news, of course, though, is our good friend Adam Stern, motorsports reporter for Sports Business Daily, reported this week that Charlotte's ticket sales for all of Charlotte Speed Weeks are actually up over 2016. So that's good.
That's good. That's good. I mean, and I do dispute that a little bit because Charlotte's looking at using the road course next year in the fall race because they're just so frustrated with what's going on the oval. I mean, how many times do you text a girl, Matt, and you say, hey, hi, ho, you know, how have you been?
I definitely don't say ho. I can tell you that.
So, I mean, how many different times do you approach the situation before you say, you know what? But it's just not working. I'm not getting a response from whatever I'm doing. And then you move on. You know what I mean? And I just think that NASCAR has done everything they possibly could with the All-Star Race at this point. I really do genuinely believe that. And if it doesn't work out, and I do believe that it will work out this weekend. I think we're going to have the best All-Star Race that we've had in a very long time. Last year's All-Star Race was really good. But it needs to work out. I really think that it needs to work out. And if not, I mean, look at the schedule changes that I know we're going to get to later. Like, you know, potential schedule changes next week. They're thinking of moving Indy because they're just tired of Indy not having the same impact that it used to. I think they're ready to try something different with the All-Star Race in much the same way.
Well, that's a great segue. You know, I was going to go into more Charlotte-centric topics, but since you brought it up, let's talk about schedule changes. For the folks at home, kind of a report that somewhat flew, I think, under the radar a little bit this week. Schedule news. Nothing, at least to my knowledge, has been officially announced yet. But very, very, you know, well-sourced reports are coming out that the 2018 schedule is going to feature some really big shakeups. Just as a summary, you're going to see Indy become the last race of the regular season. Vegas, the second Vegas race, will become the Chase opener. Richmond would move into the Chase, and then Chicagoland would presumably move up earlier into the season, presumably taking, you know, Indy's midsummer spot. On top of that, you know, you're going to have the Charlotte Road Course at the end of the season. So you're going to have another short track and then a road course now in the 2018 Chase. Some really interesting and I think pretty impactful changes coming to the 2018 schedule. You know, and you've got one of NASCAR's majors now that's getting moved deeper into the season. Think about this. Under this particular schedule format, you've got three bonafide majors in NASCAR that are going to be the last three races of the regular season. You would have the Bristol Night Race, the Southern 500, then the Brickyard 400, all in succession to end the season. Kind of like a majors swing, so to speak, of sorts. What do you make of these changes?
I think they're great. If they were, if they actually come through, because we've seen in a couple situations, right, where NASCAR will say, here's a change, they'll float it, and then for whatever reason they decide not to go through with it. But in particular, India is the season finale, I thought was really intriguing. I think you're going to get great weather there. Yep. It's not going to be as hot. And I think you're going to have that added intrigue of the actual playoffs. And this is NASCAR throwing its weight 110% behind the playoff format. And it's always been do or die with the Chase no matter what. People have tried to get rid of the playoff format over time and criticized it. And, you know, people have said that's what's ruined NASCAR. Well, they have doubled down every single time. And I cannot imagine any more doubling down than what they have done with the 2018 schedule if it comes through. Like you said, a complete and total buildup to the playoffs with the three majors beforehand. And you know what I would love to see, Matt? How about throwing together, you know, I always say that we miss something now that we don't have the Winston Million. How about $1 million bonus if somebody was able to win all three of those races in a row?
You're speaking my language, my friend, because you know I've always been a big proponent of that. You know, I look at the schedule, the 2018 schedule from an overall business perspective and how, you know, some of these changes affect the sport, and I think it just balances so well. Because, you know, you're starting the season with Daytona. And, you know, I look at the NASCAR season as where are your majors? And, you know, as for what is considered an official major, I mean, that really is up to interpretation. You know, I think most people agree Daytona, Charlotte, Darlington, Brickyard are kind of your four regular season majors, and Homestead would kind of be like a fifth major. And then beyond that, you know, the Bristol Night Race, Talladega, and maybe like the Summer Daytona Race are kind of like your unofficial majors, you know, your Players' Championship, so to speak, type events. So, you know, think about what we've got now. Let's just assume that this ends up this way. 2018 schedule will end up looking like this. You kick the season off strong with Daytona, so that's a huge major. That's the biggest event of the season. And then, you know, you go through those early season races, West Coast Swing, they're kind of benefiting from that Daytona boost. Then you kind of get a little bit of a lull. You go through that short track swing. Then you go back to Talladega, you know, kind of the second big race of the year. Get that boost again. You know, then you get Kansas, maybe Dover, and then you go back another boost. You get All-Star Race in Charlotte weekend. That's kind of a major event, those speed weeks. So you've got the Charlotte weekend. Then you kind of go through the midsummer. And that's honestly, if there's going to be a time where NASCAR can afford to cool off a little bit, it's in that time. You've got a couple tentpole events. You got Daytona in the summer, which is always good for the sport. And then you're kind of mortgaging off some of those events that are in the summer, which are strong on their own, but really aren't kind of contributing to anything because they're stuck in the middle of the season. Now look at this. Now you got the lead up to the Chase, and then you've got Bristol, Southern 500, Indy, all in a row. And then on top of that, you've got the prospect of Indy possibly becoming a restrictor plate race next year, which is obviously a very interesting proposition to this. Then on top of that, you have a chase format now, a playoff format, I should say, that rewards winning. So not only are those majors at the end of the season big simply for being majors, if you win one of those races, that can vault you on a playoff run. Take a look at somebody like Dale Earnhardt Jr. You know, he might go into those last three races of the season winless, but still in playoff contention. If he wins one of those races in a big race, NASCAR's doubling down on kind of the impact that those races are going to have. So then you go right from Indy into Vegas, which is a great place to start the whole chase, I think. It's a perfect spot. And then you kind of move through the chase. Now you've got another short track in the chase. You've got a road course in the chase. The momentum of the season just swings wildly now with this. These are some of the best changes that I've heard NASCAR make probably in the last 10 years, 15 years schedule-wise, maybe since I've been watching the sport. I mean, these are really big, impactful changes. And if things line up correctly, you know, you've got a resurgent Bristol, right? You've got a resurgent Bristol. You've got a Southern 500 that's probably as strong as it's been since the late 90s. And then if NASCAR can figure things out, maybe go into a draft-oriented package for Indy, that's a whole lot of momentum the sport would be carrying into the postseason every single year. And then on top of that, you're losing two intermediate track races in the chase. You're kicking out a New Hampshire race, which is underperforming, and then you're going to be kicking out an intermediate track race of Charlotte going to the road course. I think that's a really strong lineup, Tom.
And you're also replacing New Hampshire with Las Vegas, and in essence, Chicagoland with Las Vegas, because, you know, Chicagoland's going to be kicked out of the chase under this format, which, honestly, Chicagoland, to me, has been the lowest performing intermediate for the longest time, and I've made no secret of the fact that if I had to pluck a track off the schedule right now, and I'm hoping Chicagoland fixes it, I don't want them to close, but if I had to get rid of a track right now, it would be Chicagoland. It just has not worked out.
This could be a fun aside. I know, you know, as always, obviously our listeners know, you obviously cover the circuit on a week-to-week basis back in the day, and you always used to say that, and this is not a knock against Chicago, but Chicago was one of the most anemic, you know, just crowds and just the vibe around that race, even at NASCAR's height, from what you and I, some of the conversations we've had off the record. Would you say that holds up? Is it that Chicago is maybe one of the more underperforming tracks, more from a business perspective?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's another track where they've tried just about everything. And, yeah, unfortunately, Chicagoland is a misnomer because it's not in Chicago. It takes so freaking long to even get to Chicago. It's in the middle of nowhere. You made it a cookie cutter intermediate. Their ticket sales way back in the day, you had to buy a ticket for the entire race weekend, which made the ticket inordinately more expensive. And a lot of people didn't want to do that. They started off on the wrong foot in a location that wasn't ideal, and they've never been able to recover. And making it the chase kickoff race was their last gasp attempt, I felt like, at trying to make that track work. And I think if they're taking it off of the chase, I think Chicagoland now is potentially on the chopping block if they ever want to move to another racetrack. I think if ISC were to ever cut back, I think that's what they would do, is really focus on Chicagoland, either, you know, removing it entirely or doing a major renovation to try and make that track work. So I definitely think that that's what we're going to see over the next few years, Matt. But getting back to ideals and what we want out of the playoff format and the schedule, something I've been thinking about for a long time, and I'd be interested to see your opinion on this. I often wonder if what we should do in the future, we've changed the chase enough times that, Jesus, I mean, what's another format change at this point? I almost wonder if we should cut back the playoff to 12 drivers, 12, and make the playoff a little bit shorter. Oh. And here's why. I think 12 is a really good number. When you look at the amount of winners over the course of the regular season, it's usually about 12 to 14, right? So puts pressure on guys that have won a race. It's not an automatic that they're going to win and make the playoff. They have to win a second race to guarantee themselves a playoff spot. And for those that have won, it's not a 6-month test session the week after they win, because that is still a giant problem for the sport. I understand that they're trying to leave it open so that a guy like Chris Buescher last year could make a Hail Mary move and then get in the playoffs through a win at Pocono, right? You don't want to lose that. And you don't want to lose the ability for someone to make a charge a la Kyle Busch. At the same time, a lot of people still question Busch's championship in 2015, not because of his performance during the 10 races, but the fact he wouldn't have been there in virtually any other format because he was hurt and missed so much of the season. And so you've got that, and I think you've also got these situations where we mention all the time, Kurt Busch won the Daytona 500. It really doesn't matter what he does every single week from now until September. It's like 25 weeks of having to try their best to stay relevant.
I would say one thing on that. I think with the new – I agree with everything up to what you just said. I think that we're going to see this for the first time this year, but with this new – stage format where points carry over from chase round to chase round, it's imperative that you build playoff points throughout the season. It's really, really important. And I don't think anyone's really processed that yet, because we haven't seen it play out in an actual playoff yet. And I'll gladly eat my words if this doesn't end up being the case, but Kurt Busch is not in good shape right now. He needs to start racking up some stage points, some playoff points, maybe a couple more wins, because he's going to get to the playoff and he's going to have a deficit every round. And that team is not performing well enough right now where they could just make it up on the basis of average finish. So you're going to start seeing that every single year with this particular format. Now, with that said, I totally agree that NASCAR could make the chase significantly more impactful by cutting back on the number of drivers that make it in. I think 12 is still more than enough, personally. If you take a look at NASCAR versus other sports in terms of how many of your full-time teams make it, 12 is the right number, I think. It'd be a little bit less percentage-wise in the NBA and NHL, which definitely have too many teams that make it. And we put it right on par with the NFL, which I think is the perfect playoff, which is 12 teams, 12 out of 30 teams. So that part I totally agree with. I would go 7 races instead of 10. And the reason is because I think over the chase the last couple of years, that first round is brutal. That first round is just like, it just opens things up so that a really good team, can make mistakes and end up missing it, like we saw with Johnson in 2015. And then it just adds unnecessary variance, I think, to the playoff. The true playoff, in my opinion, doesn't really begin until the round of 12. That's when the intensity really picks up. That's the best teams in the sport going at it. A very tight window. It's exciting. The chase really becomes very exciting, I think, the fourth race. I don't really see any reason why we need that first round other than to accommodate those 4 extra teams that make it. And I get NASCAR wanting to kind of open things up so that an underdog team can make it in, but the sport is such that a Chris Buescher is never going to get past the first round. It's not going to happen. This is not like the NCAA tournament where a team could, the teams are close enough parity-wise. Chris Buescher is not the driver, and in Front Row Motorsports at the time last year was not the team where they were going to make any noise in that first round. It's just not going to happen. So
right.
I don't think there is any benefit to keeping it's hurting more than it's helping. I think it absolutely makes sense to cut it to 12. That still gives plenty of opportunity for an underdog-esque team to go on a run at the end of the season. Plenty of opportunity. Because if you win 2 races, you're probably going to have a shot at making the chase. If you can win, maybe those last 2. What would be awesome is if you cut it back to 12, and let's say you get, a fan favorite, a Chase Elliott type, has a really just mediocre regular season all year next year. And then, they start picking up the pace a little bit at the end of the season. They're an underdog going in. They're just, the team's not quite there. But they go off and they win Bristol. Okay? Now it's like, do they have a shot at making it now? That's a good storyline. So they go into Darlington. They don't do it at Darlington, but they go into the last race in Indy and they win. That's an incredible storyline. And you don't really get that. You're getting that a little bit now, I think. You got 16 teams. It does open things up a little bit, you know, for some underdog teams to make a run. But I think you're going to get more of those type of stories, ironically, if you cut it back. Because better teams are going to be going for those playoff positions. So that's a move that I would make. I don't necessarily think that 16 is the worst thing in the world. I think it can survive the way it is.
Yes.
I would really, really like to see it go to 12 with seven races. And I think that's something you might see if the sport ever starts to contract. If you take a look at the Xfinity Series playoff, that playoff system is perfect. It really is. It's 12 teams and over seven races. That's the perfect playoff, in my opinion. That would really work. And especially if you have those majors leading into it. I think you could easily cut the Dover race. You could easily cut obviously, you're going to be losing Chicago and New Hampshire. And so I don't really know what races you're going to want to keep, which ones you're going to want to get rid of. But, you know, with seven races, you could pretty much do seven different racetracks at that point. Because, you know, we're getting to a point now with the Chase. You've got Homestead, which is a unique intermediate. You've got Phoenix, which is kind of a unique track. Talladega is obviously unique. You're going to have the Charlotte Road Course. That's unique. Richmond is a unique short track. Martinsville is a unique short track. You know, take a pick as to what you want your last two races to be. You could probably mortgage off a Kansas race in there if you want to keep Vegas in the playoff, which I do think is a smart move.
But you talked about contraction. I actually think that NASCAR needs to go in the other direction. I would love to see more teams every single weekend, and I think that's one of the major problems. You know, I don't want to necessarily spin it forward because this is a really good topic, but right now we've got 16 out of 40, and it's really 16 out of 30 teams that have a realistic shot at making the playoffs. And I think that NASCAR has been hurt by not enough interest, by just struggling to fill that 40-car field, just struggling to fill those 36 medallions. We even see it in Indy with the 500. Right now, last I saw, 33 cars going for 33 spots. That's horrible. You know, that doesn't really increase interest in all of the stuff surrounding the main event. And I think that NASCAR would do well to have a little bit of both, to shrink the amount of the playoff field, but to have another manufacturer like Dodge come in and to pump the field up a little bit to where we're back to a full field of 43, and we've got 47, 48 cars trying to qualify every weekend. And I don't know if that's going to be possible or not, but I think that that is the best possible situation for the sport.
No, I think, and we'll tie up on that. I think that's ultimately the vision NASCAR has and why they think a 16-team playoff might eventually work, is if you have 40-plus teams that are full-time, then that playoff system tends to make a little bit more sense. But I just don't know how you're going to eventually reconcile that with the charter system, but, you know, that becomes a story for another day. So last change that I want to talk about as it relates to Charlotte, and I know this is something that you're very fired up about, so I'm curious to hear your take on this, and we'll finish up here. Coke 600, NASCAR has added a stage 2 weeks before the actual race itself. So that's going to be more stage points, 100, 100, 100, 100 stage format. Tom, I'm just going to let you dive in because I know you're going to want to rant and rave about this one. What do you make of this move?
Stupid, 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 stupid. I just don't understand why they think they could change rules midstream. I just don't get it. And you know, this is different than changing the competition rules and loosening up the rear spoiler. It's changing the rules by which a driver will make the playoffs. It's only one extra playoff point, but you could finish 26th in this race, Matt. And if the cards go the right way, you win the first three stages and then you blow an engine, you could get more points than the winner, I believe, under this system. 25th or 26th. If the winner wasn't in the top 10 in any of the first three stages and then ends up surging to victory in the fourth stage. So, yes, I know NASCAR is emphasizing the importance of running up front throughout the whole race, and that's why the stage points are there. But to me, it's twofold. Number one, you're changing the rules in the middle of the regular season. Even though it's only an extra 1 to 10 points for certain drivers, that can make the difference at the end of the season in someone making and missing the playoffs. And so I really don't like that at all. That's number one. But number two, I also think that you've got to look at the stage system now. And this is what happens when you think of something at the last minute. And Monster comes in at the last minute, and you're stubborn about your title sponsor, and you want a certain amount of money, and then you don't cave until the end. They really procrastinated on this and had to put together something quickly once the title sponsor got signed, and I think we're seeing the fruits of that. As much as I like the stage racing, I think the stage points count too much toward the overall playoff total and the overall points total during the regular season. I think we're going to have to take a closer look at that, which is yet another thing that fans don't like. Changes. You know, but I think that's where we're at with everything, because, Matt, 30 bonus points when you only get 40 points to win the race, I don't know. To me, that's too much.
Well, you know, I think I was actually a little bit surprised when I saw the level of outrage over this week, because, I was at work and I saw the news on this, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. So let me explain myself a little bit first. So I think there's two ways that you need to look at this move. And you have to look at the move itself and the timing of the move. And I think a lot of people are conflating those two things. So the move itself, I like it. I think the Charlotte race, being as long as it is, should be four stages, to be honest with you. I think that actually makes more sense. When you take a look at, like, how long stages have been this year, and, like, that makes sense. Like, for instance, the Kansas race, same distance of the racetrack, I think they were, what, they had 80 lap stages in Kansas last week, right? So
right.
Having 4 100, that makes sense. I'm on board with that. I like it. I think it breaks that race up properly. The only thing as far as the move itself, that and you made this point, I think that if you're going to go four stages and have that many bonus points, you do need to give some sort of an extra bonus on the tail end of the race to kind of balance it out, so that the balance of stage points to final points is the same as it is in the three stage races. That's perhaps how I would fix that. Now the timing of the move. To be honest with you, my gut didn't have the same reaction as a lot of other people did when this came out. I mean, the more that I think about it, I certainly agree with a lot of the points. I think it is a little bit reckless to make this move so close to the race distance. To NASCAR's credit, I know that they said earlier this year that the stages were going to be somewhat malleable from week to week. I think most of us, though, interpreted that to mean, like, the length of the stages and things like that. I don't necessarily know if we had anticipated, you know, a fourth stage coming into play. The timing is definitely not ideal. I don't think that would have been my move. I think this is something I would have waited to do until 2018. I think that what people are kind of getting lost in this is that if this move was made in the off season, like if this was made for 2018, and you know we found out in December that Charlotte's going to have four stages, I don't really think anybody would care. I think they'd be like, oh, cool, that kind of makes sense. I think this is really
I'll go one step further, not to interrupt you for a sec, but if people said, hey, you know, we talk about the Winston Million and the majors and say, hey, we're going to give more points and more bonus points in the majors, and we're going to give these four races a major delineation, and hey, it's $1 million bonus if you win them, and oh, by the way, there are point bonuses in here. Well, people would say, heck, I can't figure out how many points during a race my driver has anyway because of these stage bonus points now. It's not like what Brian France said a couple years ago. Sorry, Brian, changed your tune, said the points needed to be easy. Now they're not as easy anymore. So you might as well go, heck, well, that's a great suggestion, you know, considering the way this is going. So I think people wouldn't have cared. But like you said, that was the big deal, is it was done this week and not for 2018.
Yeah, and I get that. I get that. I'll be honest. I don't think I'm as outraged as anybody else it seems to be. I think part of that is just because I like having four stages, and I just don't get as high and low about some of the changes as I think a lot of other people do. I think you know how I am. I'm just more of a roll of the punches type person. Now, but what I look at it, obviously, from a business perspective, no, I agree with you. I don't think it's a smart move in that regard, because it's just not wise to make a move that close to the event. Now, with my thoughts out there, at this point, I think as long as fans are able to look past, and I know many won't because I know this fan base, but for those that are able to look past the ill timing of this, I think this is going to be a really cool test for making the majors mean a little bit more. Because I see this working out in that I think over the next 5 or 10 years, you're going to see 500-mile races start to kind of go to the wayside. I think you're going to see a lot of 300 and 400-mile races. And the ones that are going to be left are going to be Daytona, Charlotte, Southern 500, you know, insert Talladega, whatever. And I think that the 500-mile races are going to kind of maybe become majors again. You know, I think this is a good model to follow, where you have an extra stage, more bonus points, more money. I think a great way to balance this out is the winner of the race would get maybe an extra 3 bonus points on top of, you know, whatever the extra stage points is. This opens up some cool ideas. I like the direction that this is going, but I think that they could have handled this much better. Execution could have been a lot better. And I, you know, the sad thing is I think that's been the story of NASCAR over the past 15 years. Plenty of good ideas. I've always been on board with a playoff system. But I think that the original Chase was not really executed as well as it could have been. And it led to a situation where a lot of people were very apathetic towards it because of that. So these are all things that you have to consider, and I don't know why these things tend to be so fluid. But it is what it is, unfortunately. You know, we have what we have right now. I'm not as outraged. I agree with the perspective behind the outrage. But we move on, right?
Yeah, I think that what's done is done here, and I don't think it's going to make people turn off the Coca-Cola 600, but it certainly doesn't help rebuilding NASCAR's image to people that were already turned off on the sport because of the fact that they're making too many changes to the rules.
Yeah, and like I said, that's a fair point. You know, those are folks that I tend to vehemently disagree with the most. Because of, you know, different perspectives that I have. You know, because my perspective on something like this is always like, really, you know, we're adding one competition caution and that's going to make you turn off. Like, maybe you didn't want to tune in to begin with, is like my thought process when I hear people say things like that. But I agree. I don't really think this is going to cause anyone. I think if anything, it may create some fascination in a novelty sort of way. And I think another thing people need to kind of keep their eyes peeled for, if this goes well this weekend, the rumor is that the Southern 500 is going to go to 4 stages too. So that's something to keep people's eyes out. I don't know if you heard that this week, but that's the scuttlebutt that I've heard. And I would expect Daytona to go to 4 stages next year. I think any race that's long, it kind of makes more sense to go to 4 stages. But we'll have to just see how it unfolds. So, Tom.
Scuttlebutt. I appreciate your old man language. You know, at least you didn't use ho in the context of trying to make a point.
I would only use ho in the sense of gardening.
Yes. Of course. So, all right. Do you want me to do my little sports reporters like ending?
Please give me your sports reporters ending, and then we'll tie this thing up.
All right, so the one thing that we didn't talk about this week that really should deserve some mention, first of all, get well, Eric Almirola. You know, horrific hit at Kansas Motor Speedway. You know, NASCAR will investigate this. He's out 8 to 12 weeks. Regan Smith to sub in the Open. Beyond that, we don't know, although I personally think Greg Biffle would be a great choice. Heard it's not him. Heard it's not Carl Edwards. You know, they're looking at other options. You know, perhaps Casey Mears will be the veteran that fills in. But a lot of chatter this week about Danica and about what Danica said after that race and about her viewpoint on everything. I think that Danica Patrick deserves a little bit of a break. She had just hit the wall at 200 miles an hour. None of us have experienced that or know what it does to your mind. Eric had also not hit her car directly, so any information she had on Almirola was limited to, you know, the background noise of the safety workers behind her trying to get Eric out of the car and, you know, what she had heard from Logano. But keep in mind that Eric had put his window net down initially to signify that he was okay. So she comes out, she expresses some frustration over a lost season, which, look, she has a lost season, let's face it. 33rd in points, she wouldn't even be in the playoffs if she won a race right now. And she has five DNFs and 11 starts. Four of them are due to wrecks. Three of them are wrecks that are not of her own making. And this particular wreck at Kansas stole a top 10 finish from her. So she has a right to be frustrated. She lost her sponsor on top of it, that settling out of court that puts her future in jeopardy beyond this season. And I think Danica's struggling as to whether she even wants to race beyond this season. So I feel like if any of us had the pressures that she had over the course of the year, combined with the wreck that she just went through, I don't think the first thing out of her mouth would be thoughts and prayers with Eric Almirola. I just don't. And, you know, I think that he deserves a little bit of a break.
No, you're absolutely right. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's actually something I wanted to bring up this week. I thought I understood why the outrage happened. I got it. But something that a lot of people, I think, overlooked was the fact that Danica was in the care center when Eric was in there, saw Eric, and I'm assuming probably could get a pretty good sense of what the extent of his injuries were. The way his injury was, it was pretty clear within a day or so that that was not going to be, you know, a serious injury, you know, in the vein of, you know, this might, you know, impact his quality of life, you know, for years to years to come. My impression is that Danica, being in the care center, probably was able to see, yeah, he's banged up, he's going to be out for a little bit, but generally speaking, he's fine. You know, it's much better than it could have been. So if that's what Danica saw, I think that completely changes the tone of her interview, right? So
I agree.
That's something I do think Danica kind of got unfairly taken to task for that, but unfortunately, that is a product of the media culture that we live in. So,
and in closing, you know, we could have a different conversation about, you know, what her future is going to be. I just thought that it was interesting that Danica was brought to NASCAR in this blaze of glory, great fan base. She's going to make the sport more popular. Her Daytona 500, if you remember, was one of the highest rated Daytona 500s that we've seen in recent years, one where she won the pole and she was a contender. So I think that she came in this blaze of glory, and now here we are 4 years later and all the fans are off with their head. I just find that whole phenomenon fascinating. And where Danica was supposed to give us more NASCAR fans, if anything, the base is turning against her.
Indeed they are. It's a wild turn, really, just to watch the fall from grace. And hopefully Dan can turn things around here. So that ties everything up for us this week. Folks, All-Star Race, depending on when you listen to this, tomorrow night, May 20th on Fox Sports 1. Tom, give me your Twitter handle.
NASCAR Balls.
And I am at MStall41 on Twitter. Folks, we'll catch you next week.